Welcome to Manager Tools. The myth of the feedback myth, part one. This cast answers these questions. How do I counteract pushback on feedback? What should I do when performance reviews and feedback are discussed? Why is feedback under attack? Well, if you want answers to these important questions and more, keep listening. Here we go.
A wise philosopher said, "The more that you read, the more things you will know. The more that you will learn, the more places you'll go." You probably know the philosopher is Dr. Seuss. Books are a cheap, fast way to learn new things. The Effective Manager book and the Effective Hiring Manager book are also great ways to consolidate what you've heard on the podcast. If you're struggling to get to the big picture, the Effective Manager and the Effective Hiring Manager are waiting to take you to new places. You can purchase signed copies on our website and find links to other places to purchase unsigned ebook, Kindle, and Audible versions. And if you're listening to this in real time, we currently have a 15th anniversary special for signed copies on the website. So be sure to go right away.
Okay, I don't get it. I'm sure you're going to make me a lot smarter about the attacks on performance communications and feedback in some notable publications. It's mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, look, I think this stems from a lot of factors. I could spend hours just talking about the state of management training and management thought and management advice, and there's certainly been a swing toward individuals. And we have a lot of individuals saying, you know, feedback makes me feel uncomfortable. And, oh, well, we wouldn't want people to feel uncomfortable. Because, you know, if you ever climb Everest, it's nothing but a comfortable climb. You always feel comfortable. You always feel safe. You always feel nurtured when you do really hard things. Oh, wait. No, that's not true.
Yeah, I've never heard anybody say who achieved greatness and said, oh, yeah, it was easy. It was just no work at all.
Piece of cake. Yeah, it's sweat and blood and tears. I have nothing to offer, blood, toil, tears, and sweat. Yeah, so in the last couple of years, generally performance communication between bosses and directs has come under attack. Now, to be fair, Mike, over the last 30 years, there has never been a year where I was not involved either peripherally or directly in a situation where HR was attempting to intervene to protect a direct from a manager who was giving them performance communications. So this is not a new trend. You know, in that particular case, it had really had nothing to do with the performance communications. It was that the direct felt that HR should come to their aid, and HR mistakenly did, because HR mistakenly believes that they are the voice of the employees as if they're a union. And that's not true. I love HR. Good HR is priceless, but because managers are employees too. But lately, in the last couple of years, it's gotten worse because there's a big feeling that we should do something that's safe and pleasant for directs. And frankly, there are people out there right now saying all performance communications are flawed. None of it works. And the reason we wrote this cast, it's a very unusual cast for us, is that they're completely wrong. They're utterly, totally wrong. And I'm tired of it. I got tired of it reading an article. And so I thought what we would do is go through these two articles that I read. I read an article in Inc. magazine where two business people were debating about whether or not performance reviews were useful. And it was just idiocy. I mean, it was cute. It was a good article idea, but it was this really bad discussion. And they talked about feedback in it. And then what really bothered me was the Harvard Business Review ran a long article called The Feedback Fallacy. And for the record, it's by Marcus Buckingham, a guy whose work I like. But I got to tell you guys, I disagreed with both of these articles significantly, and I thought somebody ought to come to the defense of feedback. It bugs me that there are managers who are feeling the zeitgeist of management thinking or hearing from some executive who just went to a 5-week session at Harvard on executive education. Well, the latest thinking on feedback, you know, is it doesn't really work, and the learning style issue relative to a person's ability to accept things without fear or retribution. And you're like, geez, who am I talking to? A psychologist? A psychiatrist? The guy messed up. Somebody needs to tell him, hey, that wasn't good. Can you do that better next time? But no. So here's the outline. We basically have two articles to talk about. I've broken up the cast into three parts. First, we're going to talk about the first article from Inc. magazine, should you conduct formal performance reviews? And we're going to do that in two parts. Performance reviews aren't primarily about feedback. Duh. We've been saying that for years. And we need both feedback and reviews. They're meant for different purposes. The idea that you can substitute one for the other is dumb. It's like substituting toothpaste for your car. They're not the same thing. And then the third part, the title of it is Feedback Isn't a Fallacy. And we'll walk through in some detail, quoting from the article extensively, why it's really wrong and really bad. And if you read Harvard Business Review, the article came out a year ago, and I regret that I didn't write a letter to the editor, but I thought that I've been carrying this article around for a while, and I was tired of carrying it around in my head. And I realized that probably we have a bigger audience than the people who read the letters in Harvard Business Review. So there you go.
Before we get to covering the items in the outline, we sometimes make the mistake, I think, of assuming that everybody listening has heard all of our previous guidance, and people might get a little bit confused. Now, I'm going to ask Mark to be really quick about this. Yeah, good luck. Yeah. I'm more interested in hearing from you what feedback is not. When people talk about feedback, sometimes I think in their ears, they're hearing, you know, a good old butt chewing. And that's what we're not talking about right here. When we say
feedback. You just said butt on air. I can't believe you said that. That's good.
I want to say a different word. That's
totally appropriate.
Isn't that an anatomical term?
I don't know. Okay. What is feedback not? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah. It's not a chewing, right? It's delivered politely, professionally.
Yes, exactly. Feedback is a manager encouraging a direct to do the right thing in the future. If it's negative feedback, you're asking them to change. If it's positive feedback, you're asking them to do more of the same. But the purpose of feedback in the context of managerial life, as opposed to stubbing one's toe, because when you stub your toe, your body gives you feedback that says, don't do that again. Okay. That's, I think, what most people think of when they think of feedback is like negative, right? But feedback is both negative and positive, and I'll give a really great example of it here in a few minutes. But feedback is a manager.
Notice he said in a few minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually got kind of excited writing this one. It took me 5 or 6 hours. But yeah, feedback is a manager encouraging their direct to be effective in the future, either by encouraging more of the same or asking them to behave differently, but not necessarily prescriptively. Feedback is not yelling, screaming. It's not praise. It's not patting people on the back. It's not group comments like great job, guys. It's not generic, like nice work on this, or hey, I really like this. It's not sexist or ageist or racist in any other way. It's just communication about performance that's focused on encouraging the future.
Yeah. And encouraging is probably the key word there, folks. So if in your head you linked up feedback with anything other than encouragement, I just encourage you to put that aside.
Yeah, that's a good point. I should probably hammer that home more often. Remember, you think feedback, think encouragement. And that would get it out of, when I say feedback, I know everybody immediately goes negative. But just because you're biased doesn't mean you're right.
Right.
And you're not. Because by the way, your bias makes you feel more right. But you're not. Okay. So that was a good aside, Mike. I appreciate you saying that. In fact, the juxtaposition of encouragement and negative, I think is really good, really helpful.
Cool. Okay. So let's get to our first item. We're going to talk about performance reviews. And performance reviews aren't primarily about feedback, right?
Yeah. Who knew?
Who knew?
Apparently, nobody in Inc. magazine or none of the two CEOs. Anyway, okay. In the late 2019 issue, I want to say it's December, but I could be wrong, issue of Inc. magazine, there's an article. And it's actually kind of a wide sidebar article. It's not the only thing on the page. called Should You Conduct Formal Performance Reviews? And two CEOs of small firms are asked four questions about reviews. And the basic premise of the article is the magazine is going to grade the answers from each of them on the four questions and determine which one gets the advantage of the other one, which one wins the debate, if you will. Now, to be clear, guys, we chose this article not because it's rare, okay? Not because it's weird, but because it really captures the current debate, the zeitgeist about performance reviews, and then relatedly, feedback, well. And it also talks about which is better, reviews or feedback, right? It brings that into the mix, even though the original question was only about reviews. And of course, what's interesting about that debate is that's a dumb question to ask, which is better, reviews or feedback? It's like, you know, which do you think is better, a tomato or hardwood floors? I mean, okay. I mean, it depends on whether I'm eating them or not, I guess. Now, look, no problem. I actually like articles like this generally. Let's have more opinions. And I also like the debate stuff, that they don't just interview one person who says, oh, yeah, we've got to move past this, or we got to do this, or we got to do that, like the second article we're going to talk about. And Mike, you know, it occurs to me, I said this is an unusual cast, but I mean, have we ever done a cast where all we did was explicate on an article or two?
Ooh, I don't think we have. It's been so long, but I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's been so long. I can't remember all the podcasts we've done.
And folks, we're not doing this because we've run out of other material to talk about. Don't send that email.
Oh my God.
Now they're just going to review
you for saying that.
Articles.
Particularly right now, since things is coming out daily, right? So people just think, yeah, I'll just email Mark. Seriously, you're running out? I mean, Mike, how many times have you asked me, hey, are we going to run out of topics?
Not in the last few years, but it used to be a weekly conversation. Yeah,
it used to be a regular thing. Are we going to run out? I'm like, dude, I'm not never going to run out. I think I'm still over 3,000 more. And I tell Kate and Sarah and everybody else who listen in the company, you guys really need to chain me to my desk, and I don't get to travel anymore. I shouldn't play golf, and all I should do is write. Anyway, okay. So, you know, the article brings up a good point. I didn't like the article, but it brought up a good point. But unfortunately for readers, whomever they may be, in this case, the opinions are positioned as guidance for other CEOs, for companies, and for managers. And I don't think they're helpful at all. They're much more a restating of common wisdom. And remember the manager tools rule that wisdom isn't common, and so therefore common wisdom is wrong. The common wisdom about reviews. And in fact, in this case, the magazine determines that the CEO who takes the position that we should not conduct formal performance reviews has the advantage in the debate. Almost no one would draw that conclusion from the question and answers I saw, but it didn't matter. Apparently the fix was in. So the reason we mention it here, again, along with the feedback fallacy article, which is much more famous, is that two of the four questions that were put to these CEOs mention performance feedback because of the stupid idea that performance reviews and feedback are somehow the same thing or similar. I'm not saying they're not categorically related to one another, the way tomatoes and mayonnaise go together in a sandwich, but it's not like you just think of mayonnaise immediately when you think of tomatoes. But now you say performance reviews, everybody thinks feedback. You say feedback, everybody thinks performance reviews. It's dumb. Sorry. Okay. And by the way, I'm not calling you dumb. It's a dumb thing. Okay. You're smart and it's a dumb thing. I can tell you, I have plenty of dumb ideas and I'm not stupid. I don't know how smart I am, but I'm not dumb. Okay, the reason that happens, that the common wisdom is longstanding, and we'll get to that. Now, to be fair in this case, I think we said earlier, I think I used the word debating. They're not really debating. What they do is they each are asked four questions, and then they put the question in the middle, and they put each person's answer on either side. And so they're not responding to one another. They're not having to defend their points against the other person. And here are the four questions they're asked. Is the annual review process still relevant? I mean, what they're talking about is still relevant in the history of mankind, not is it still relevant for you today, but are annual reviews a good idea at all? Okay. Can more casual feedback replace formal reviews? Can constant feedback be disruptive in its own way? If you're a clever person and maybe a writer, you can already see that the magazine is attempting to skew the argument. And last one was, do formal reviews discourage proactivity? I'm sorry, but I really do think that the council is leading the witnesses. But anyway, and we would have chosen different questions, but I get it. You got to sell magazines. And so a little bit of flash, a little bit of juice. Okay, fine. Now, one of the reasons Inc. magazine said the anti-review CEO won was that at the end, by the way, they put this in their subnote. They gave it to the no, let's not do reviews person, is because they said, quote, according to Gallup research, and by the way, Gallup is interesting in this because Buckingham, the guy in the next article, used to work for Gallup. According to Gallup research, formal review processes aren't well received, and they're expensive. An organization of 10,000 employees can waste as much as $2 to $35 million a year in lost working hours. Guys, I just want to tell you, that's a problem with how performance reviews are done. Poorly, I would argue, not whether or not the process is useful. I'm going to go further and say, I found it frustrating that the two CEOs who were discussing this are CEOs of relatively small companies. I mean, no, really, actually, kind of small. One is smaller than Manager Tools in revenue and close to us in the number of employees.
Oh my God, so they're tiny.
Yeah, I mean, and for the record, guys, all small companies want to be big, okay? But smart, small companies. No, we do want to be bigger, but we want to be bigger in the right way. And the typical way that bigness is characterized is employees. And that's the wrong way to think about it, okay? What we want is bigger in terms of reach, okay? So that means perhaps structure.
Well, I do agree with that.
Yeah. Good.
Good.
Yeah.
We're aligned. Two owners of the company are aligned. Good.
Yeah.
You heard it here first.
Yeah. You know, in 15 years, for those of you who don't know, when we record these, we're recording them. Each of us are at home. Mike has a home in Modesto, California. I live in Pebble Beach. And we are on the phone on a Skype call right now, but we're each recording our own half of the call. And then our marvelous audio engineer, Paul Figiani, we upload each of our sound files. I only capture my half. He captures his half. And then Paul does this magic thing where he marries them together. And for the record, since I always say this, every time we ever record, you should know that I think once or twice in our 15-year times 50 weeks a year, so what is that, 750 Manager Tools casts and another 700 probably Career Tools casts, in our entire time, maybe twice we've had to record a show because somebody discovered, oops, I didn't hit the record button, or oops, for some reason it's corrupt for whatever reason. But if you're listening to a 30-minute show, it took us 31 minutes to record that. I mean, Paul might edit out a word or two of Mike's, but I don't mind that you hear me stumbling. I don't mind that, I might not say something perfectly, or I might have a few ums and ahs. Even Toastmasters doesn't mandate zero ums and ahs. But we're recording separately. And yesterday, Mike was here. When he's in Modesto, he can come over, and we spent the day talking about the future of Manager Tools, Blue Ocean Strategy, the one product theory, which we're very excited about. And we talked about the future and how much bigger we want to be and how we can serve more people, but also not grow, which means more productivity out of the people we have. It was a good, I thought it was one of our best.
Yeah, it was awesome.
I don't know. Yeah, it was really cool.
Pretty excited.
Yeah.
And I couldn't sleep last night because of all the ideas flashing through my head. So thank you for that.
I had a little bit of that as well. Now, after we got done, I had to finish writing this podcast. I didn't finish writing this podcast at 10 o'clock, but I don't care. Just, it was just one of those days like, okay, I'm lucky I have this job. Thank you.
We're pleased to announce the release of our Effective Communicator Conference in virtual format. We're now accepting registrations at manager-tools.com/training. The event is going to start with a 4-hour virtual session with a live trainer who will answer all of your questions, and then we'll give you access to our online practice. You'll be given the scenarios, the opportunity to practice, and then you'll send in videos for evaluation by the presenter. All of this and a DISC assessment for the low price of $450. Register today.
Okay, so the other company, one is smaller than us. The other one has only 180 employees. And that's nowhere near the size of 10,000 the magazine suggests would create waste because of the burden of the administration of the performance review process. Further, if you know our guidance, the right time to be putting in place systems like performance reviews is around 150 employees. 150, that's Dunbar's number. If you don't know what that is, you could look it up. We have a podcast about it. The small company experience is not a good reference for 10,000 person companies' adoption of systemic HR practices. Now look, let's be fair. Inc. is targeted at small companies. But that would mean that the Gallup data isn't really relevant to small companies. Now, I mentioned it before, one of Horstman's laws is that all small companies want to be big, and that's a good thing, because a company that grows sustainably is serving society at a price-to-value, cost-to-benefit point that has utility for both the company and the customer. That means it's a value proposition many more people, customers, would benefit from, and that is the lever for growth. Okay? Now, one of the hurdles for small companies becoming big is knowing when to introduce systems that support the growth they want, right? Small companies, guys, don't need HR systems generally. Now, if you get contacted by a small company or an HR services firm, and you're a 10-person company, and they're saying, well, actually, you might could use our services. Remember, they're trying to sell you something. That doesn't mean it's a smart thing for you to buy. Small companies don't need an HR expert on staff, provided managers are given responsibility for those HR areas that a small company has to worry about. For instance, you don't need construction of compensation bands or levels of pay in a 20 or even a 50-person company. You don't. When small companies do have an HR professional, that usually tells me the managers are woefully undertrained and perhaps, unfortunately, also overregulated. The general rule regarding HR policies, guys, is as companies grow, you want to implement them neither too soon to be burdensome nor too late to cause chaos. Wait until there's some chaos before you build HR systems. The HR people don't like that, of course, because it narrows their market, but I'm sorry. You shouldn't do things just because somebody wants to sell you something. You should do things because it makes sense to you. Now, some of the comments of the two CEOs were just off base, in my opinion. I think I like both of them. I mean, they're successful. In fact, in this particular case, they're both women CEOs, which I tip my hat to. And I think they're smart people, but they're just, to some degree, captured by the common wisdom that feedback and performance reviews are somehow the same thing or something. I don't know. Answering the first question, which is, are annual reviews still relevant? The Andy Review CEO said, annual reviews are anxiety-inducing. And in fact, the Pro Review CEO said, employees typically feel the process isn't fair or objective. Well, what's wrong with both of those comments is the focus is on the feelings of the directs. I mean, that's what we talk about now. We had a client recently say, my directs were triggered when you said that you You should not be having one-on-ones with your skip level directs. I thought, wow, triggered. Okay. If organizations are only allowed to implement systems that directs feel good about, we might as well not have organizations. We know thousands of professionals who look forward to their annual reviews. And at the same time, many of these people are also anxious. The elimination of processes that cause anxiety is a stupid standard.
Unless you believe there should be no growth in the world.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, like, no pain, no gain. I'm not suggesting your job is to inflict pain, guys, but holy Toledo, as long as you've got one person saying, well, I don't feel comfortable with this. I mean, every once in a while, somebody needs to say, it's not my job to make you feel comfortable. How you feel is your fault. Horseman's Law. Okay, again, further, these issues say nothing about the relative value of the system necessarily. They're talking about how people feel when they've been asked, are annual reviews still relevant? By the way, neither one of these people have a company big enough that I think they would need to have anything more than an informal review process. Now, full disclosure, guys, we have put out our guidance on performance reviews in enormous detail, arguably some of the best work I've ever done in terms of a particular, very narrow, focused topic. How to prepare for, how to write, how to deliver annual reviews. And then we also came up with a system for how you manage annual reviews, and we gave you a one-page performance review. And because we don't like not living our own guidance, even though there are some burdens put upon us as a small company that we shouldn't have them, we actually do performance reviews here so that everybody here understands what it's like to feel to get one. And Mike and I have to write all of them. Actually, no, we don't anymore. Kate and Sarah have directs now.
There right? you go. Yeah.
Okay. So what they're saying isn't really relevant to the question, which is about relevance. And really, their answers about how people are anxious or uncomfortable are much more likely an indictment of poor implementation and lousy managerial training. We can count on one hand the percentage of companies we have ever heard of that even have a modicum of training for managers around performance reviews beyond using the system the company has bought or developed. By the way, you don't need a system. Waste of time. Waste of money. These issues can be virtually eliminated by well-trained managers delivering a reasonable process that they've been briefed about in an effective way. I don't know why. For instance, Mike, I've been thinking about this, and we're going to do a cast about it at some point. Why the heck, when there's a form that somebody has to use, let's say it's a performance review on somebody, and let's say there's a form, and I don't think there needs to be form, but let's assume that's true. Why can't we list the process steps for the annual review process on the back of the form?
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice?
Well, I mean, why not? Why right. make everybody try to figure it out every time they have to do it once?
Let's make everybody guess.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, well, I'll tell you why. That would mean HR would have to update it every time they made changes, and they're always tweaking the dang thing. And then we wouldn't be able to make changes in private and then hold managers accountable for changes they weren't briefed on.
Right, and you change them every year, and then you wonder why nobody knows what the process is.
I can't do it. I'm literally going to become Dark Mark in 30 seconds, so we're going to get back to it.
Yeah, please.
Good. Okay, yeah, please.
Is that scary? It scares
me. Yeah, it's scary. It scares you. Don't be scared. Okay. Look, guys. Your performance review system doesn't even have to have a particularly good process. It doesn't have to. It needs to be good, but it doesn't need to be perfect. But the organization has a reasonable interest in having managers report to leadership on the relative strengths and weaknesses of their personnel. Okay? You do. Is our performance review still relevant? Oh, hell yes. Anybody who says otherwise is at a very small company. But big companies? Yeah. Completely relevant. The idea that some people are uncomfortable about them, that has nothing to do with the system's relevance. Regarding the second question, can more casual feedback replace formal reviews? First, guys, they're cheating. This is a terrible question. They juxtapose casual with formal. Okay? Because those are judgmental words. Some people like one, some people like the other. And to suggest to the average manager that feedback is casual is just dumb. Most managers cringe at giving feedback for so many good reasons. They think all feedback is negative. They don't know. They don't listen to us. That's okay. They haven't been trained on how to do it. They know there's going to be pushback because their friends told them, oh, when you talk to him, he's going to be angry. They've been led to believe they must avoid behaviors that create anxiety in their employees. All these things. Okay. Now, on this question, though, one of the CEOs says, boards want performance tied to business outcomes. Now, she's right, but if she thinks every board wants every employee in a 150-person company to have their individual deliverables tied to business outcomes, she's crazy. Doesn't happen. And she also goes on to say, no board would accept a system that wasn't structured. Nah. No board has ever overseen the detailed structure pushed down to every individual contributor in the company. So that doesn't hold a lot of water. Okay. Now, look, we can only assume that her comments were in response to the casual reference in the question, which we already described is clumsy. And why wouldn't it be? I suspect that the person who wrote the questions was a reporter, but they're not business HR management experts. Neither am I a reporter. And let's not believe for a minute that the only performance communications a manager can have with their directs can be clearly tied to business outcomes. Sorry, it doesn't work that way.
You can try, but it's gonna be a real interesting conversation.
As for the last question, do formal reviews discourage proactivity? I mean, since everybody likes proactivity, I'm sorry to say, asking if something discourages proactivity is just like chumming the water for sharks. But anyway, it's a poor question. The CEO against reviews says yes, because you have to give feedback throughout the year. I don't understand how giving feedback throughout the year is somehow against performance reviews. It's not an either-or proposition. The CEO in favor of performance reviews says, no, formal reviews don't discourage proactivity because employees want structure and want to know how their work contributed to the organization. Now, we do agree with that. But here's the thing, guys. We want to come to the fundamental point that everyone seems to have forgotten. Annual reviews were invented in order to provide succession planning data to companies, not to deliver performance feedback to the employee. How do I know this? The organization that invented performance reviews was the U.S. Army after the U.S. Civil War, when almost all of its officers were killed. It was done to address a problem that, while especially important to the military, succession planning, the captain's dead, colonel, which lieutenant is going to take his or her place, okay? That process, certainly important to the military, is still relevant for other organizations. Who is best suited to take over for their boss in the event the boss is unable to do his or her job? And thankfully, death is not the reason for the turnover in the vast majority of cases. So the Army invented the idea of performance reviews. And the first performance reviews were not shared with the person being reviewed. That's how performance reviews came to be. In fact, if you go online and search for Omar Bradley performance review, you'll find one. Basically, one paragraph was obviously typed by somebody else and signed by George Patton, the famous Patton, which should tell you something about Patton's political skills. At one point, Omar Bradley worked for him. And then 2 years later, Patton worked for Omar Bradley. Look, it was only decades later in the history of the world, guys, that civilian organizations started using performance reviews regularly. And for the same reason, the reviews were not shared with the evaluated employee. It was only 20, 30, 40, 50 years after that when companies discovered that they had to start having managers develop their people, distributing responsibility more broadly, that someone thought that sharing reviews with employees could serve as feedback vehicles. Performance reviews have always been terrible devices for providing performance improvements communication to employees. They are. You mentioning to me something in December that I did in March is either old news or it's embarrassing. It's old news if you've done it right.
We've especially already talked about March. When you tie my promotion or my raise to something that happened in March, it's now December, and you never told me about it. Oh,
never told me. I mean, that's literally like malfeasance right there. But managers were so bad at giving developmental feedback, and by the way, this includes both positive and negative guidance. Reviews were seized on as an existing vehicle to deliver performance communications to the employee, and so they started getting shared with employees. Maybe it's not a bad idea, but it starts from a really bad platform. And it made too many managers and executives and HR professionals believe that reviews are performance communications. But they're only a small part of them, and that's not what their intent is.
Yeah, and if you think the performance review is all about giving feedback, then that suggests to many people that that's the only performance feedback they need to give. And for the reasons you just described, it's a bad idea.
It's just a bad idea. And then we're making it weird by suggesting these two things are, again, it's like tomatoes and hardwood floors. Okay.
There you go. And we need both feedback and reviews. And we're going to talk about that next week.
Oh, we are.
Yeah, we are indeed.
That's fun. I tell you, guys, if you're thinking this is not actionable, I think this is probably the one cast where I would say, okay, we are going to give you some recommendations later on, but we want you to know how to respond when somebody in your company says, maybe we don't need reviews, or even worse, somebody will bring up the idea of reviews as being super important in order to begin the conversation about managers not having to do feedback. And what you should do is nod your head and let them go along, and then continue to give feedback to your directs so that your directs will win. And as the saying goes, for the Harvard football team after they lost a football game, that's all right. That's okay. You'll all work for us someday. Folks, our long-term licensee is a special friend of the firm and client, somebody we have broken bread with a number of times over the years, Dan McGuire. Dan is famous for naming the hump on the Horseman curve as the McGuire hump of the Horseman curve when he said to me one day regarding the hump, why do I always feel like I'm on the hump? And Dan is also famous for when we mentioned him in a podcast, this is probably 10 years ago, he happened to be working in Wall Street, New York City. And he was crossing Broadway at the time on foot, and we mentioned him, and he had a momentary lapse of sanity and almost got hit by a car. So, Dan, you're a good friend of Mike and I's, and of course, of the team. We're glad you've been with us for literally since the very beginning. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. That's it for this week. We'll continue with this topic next week. In the meantime, have a great one. So long.